The Tom Woods Show, episode 1966.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, social media is a pit of misinformation when it comes to the subject of guns. So what you need is my free ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Guns. Smashes all the myths and a lot of fun to read. Pick it up at wrongaboutguns.com. Hey folks, Tom Woods here. Took the long weekend off, so no episode this past Monday, but here we are back again, and I've got an excellent program for you today. And before we get to it, I want to tell you about a little site created by one of my listeners called concealedhistory.com, and it is focused, at least for now, primarily on the question of sound money and on a little bit of the history of sound money, but primarily, what did the founders think about sound money? And frankly, that is concealed history. What do you think the average person knows about Thomas Jefferson's views on money? And they were very, very hardcore. He was very much a sound money guy, as were so many of the others. This is completely unknown, of course, because if it were known, then we might think to ourselves, well, these are pretty smart people, and they hold positions that MSNBC and, frankly, half the time Fox News tell me are not respectable and stupid and backward. Well, I don't know. Maybe Jefferson was smarter than, you know, whatever airhead is on these television networks. They don't want to give us those ideas. So concealedhistory.com goes into that. And of course, I endorse the telling of this history very much. By the way, I love the fact that concealedhistory.com was available and somebody took it. One thing I haven't told anybody before is that my website, libertyclassroom.com, you know, where we have history and economics courses and stuff like that, the name for that came about simply because that was the best website name I could find that was available. I tried so many things that were taken, and I just kept doing it and doing it until I found a URL, a domain name that I could buy. And the domain name basically named the website. I wanted the domain name and the website to be the same. Liberty Classroom was available, so that's what I named the site. Anyway, that's just a little story. It may be of no interest to anybody, but to me, it's interesting. Anyway, check out concealedhistory.com. I'll link to it on our show notes page, tomwoods.com/1966. And for you to get publicity for a website you are thinking of starting, all you got to do is get your hosting, which you need anyway, and you'll get it for an excellent price through my link. And then I'll promote you on the show and get you in my private bloggers group where we help each other out and get you some free tutorials, all kinds of free goodies. Doesn't cost you an extra cent. Get the details on how to do that at tomwoods.com/publicity. Now, today we're joined by an old friend of the show, the great Connor Boyack, who is the brains and the author behind the Tuttle Twins children's books series. But he's also done, he's worked on books for teens, and we're going to talk about one of those. He runs a state-level think tank in Utah, the Libertas Institute. He's just doing so much all the time. I don't know how he does it. And the book we're going to talk about today is How to Not Suck at Life, 89 Tips for Teens. But let's be honest with ourselves here. When you read this book, you're going to realize these tips are every bit as much for adults as they are for teens. It's just that if you start following them when you're a teen, you're going to be much, much more successful and fulfilled as an adult. So this is the kind of book you want your teen to read. And if your teen won't read it, well, you read it and you start dropping the wisdom into conversations where appropriate. I'm telling you, it's urgently necessary to read this. And when you see the table of contents alone, you'll understand why. This will give your teen an unfair advantage, without a doubt. So Connor, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, look, one way not to suck at life, first of all, is not to be a midwit. Now, a midwit is not a stupid person. It's a person of maybe, I don't know, 110 IQ, just smart enough to know how to tell me exactly what Dr. Fauci's opinions are, you know, in great detail. That's level of smart. But who will, if you break a grammatical rule, will make sure to tell you, even though it happens to be a case when clearly, in order to avoid a literary atrocity, you have to break a grammatical rule. And usually that rule is not even a hard and fast rule. It's just a general rule. So in your book title, you have a split infinitive. And if anybody writes to me to point that out, I'm sorry to tell you, you're a midwit. Because in this case, it would be like saying, to go boldly where no man has ever gone before. That sounds terrible. Of course you say to boldly go. And it's much better to say to not suck at life. It's a much, much punchier title that way. So I just want to say, just for anybody out there, and I know there's a handful of you, we've covered that. All right. You ready to talk some real stuff now?
All right. Sounds good. Yeah. My third grade English teacher might be rolling her eyes, but 99% of people don't care and, you know, talk normally. So
yeah,
I guess we're talking to them today.
That's right. We are. We are. So, okay. Why in 2021 do you need to have a book for teens guiding them on some of the basic principles and practices they want to have to be successful?
So a couple things going on here. As you know, and as you've been gracious to have me on your show several times over the years about our Tuttle Twins books, we're educating a lot of kids about the principles of a free society, and frankly, their parents as well, who often never learn this in school. And so now we've got over 500,000 families just on our email list, let alone all the others who, you know, are reading the books and know about what we're doing. And so I send, you know, multiple emails a week, my thoughts on current events and what's happening and how to talk to their kids about this stuff. And so I get a ton of responses from parents. And I got to tell you, they are beside themselves, largely speaking. So many of them are worried about the, call them the influencer class that their children are being exposed to, these abject morons who are popular because of their intentional stupidity and their ignorance. And so I've been hearing over the past couple years, 2-3 years, from a lot of parents who have this very specific worry that the quote-unquote role models their children are being exposed to, these YouTubers and TikTokers and all the rest, that their children are being very much swayed by the mentality and the approach and the mannerisms and all that kind of stuff of these influencers, so-called. And so I've been kind of thinking about that, like, you know, as a parent myself, like, what do we do for these kids? Do they have good role models? Do they understand, you know, why these vapid, ignorant people are not role models? Sure, maybe they produce a funny video here and there, but who are the role models for our kids today? Couple that with the fact that you've got, you know, Jordan Peterson out there telling, you know, people to clean their room and all these basic rules for life that we all kind of implicitly understand and have been taught by good parents. And yet there's this massive demand for the message that he's bringing to people, this very kind of core competency, no nonsense, you know, intentional living. And so I've been kind of thinking about the intersect between Jordan's message, largely, you know, for adults to basically grow up and be adults, and what kids don't seem to have. And so I started teasing some of these ideas and replying to parents, what do you think about this? How do you feel about, you know, some of these ideas I have if I were to put them in a book? And just massive, massive response of like, oh my gosh, I need this. Because I think I say this on the back of the book or in some of our marketing material, I'm like, hey, parents, I'm not going to tell your kids anything you haven't already told them, right? Like, it's not like any of the ideas in my book are like these novel, mind-blowing things. Sure, maybe a few of them are something a parent would naturally bring up, but most of them are ideas and messages that parents are already teaching. Although what I find is that, especially with teenagers, when it comes from a third-party voice, when it comes from someone else, it resonates more than if mom or dad are telling it to you. And so I tell the parents, hey, look, I'm not trying to steal your thunder. I'm not trying to teach things you haven't already taught. But when it comes from someone else, it seems to have kind of this additional impact, especially on teens, beyond what the parents can do. Anyways, all those ideas kind of swirling around together led me to say, we need a book like this. Parents need a book like this. And so that's what we did.
I seem to recall each chapter being 2 pages. You must have, after you have 89 of these, that can't be a coincidence. You must have done that on purpose.
Yeah, these are 2 pages. I intentionally kept this brief. I'm not trying to write this, you know, whole expose on all these topics. This is more like, let's drop a whole bunch of nuggets so mom can talk to the teen about it more, so the teen can ask questions. This is just, I almost wanted this to be like a daily diary where each day you could just focus on, you know, one different tip. And then what we're going to be doing with some of our marketing to parents is providing them some of these like writing prompts and journal opportunities and allowing kids to think about these things in an intentional way. I didn't want them to say, hey, teenager, go read 35 pages about this idea. I want to get in, be quick, be focused, plant that seed in their mind about this topic, let them germinate over that topic, and then think and write about it more as they progress.
Now, I'm going to pick out few of these, but feel free to mention any that you think are especially important that I didn't get to. But when you say don't follow the popular path, well, you know, you're talking to the poster child of not following the popular path. Nobody starts off thinking, I think I'll wind up as a podcaster with some sponsors and whatever. I mean, no one does that. But I don't know, sometimes the popular path is the right thing to do. I mean, maybe what we need to do is discriminate between when it makes sense to do that and when not. I mean, these days it's popular to, you know, to be Whole 30 or paleo or whatever. And that's, yeah, it's not the mainstream, but there's a big movement behind it. What do you mean by this? I think I know what you're getting at.
Yeah, I share in this particular chapter, you can find this clip on YouTube, the story from this old TV show, I think it was like in the 80s or 90s, called Brain Games. It was on National Geographic. And I remember years ago when I came across this clip, my mind was blown. Everyone's in this, I'm trying to remember, it was like in an eye doctor clinic, and they're offering like free exams or something. And so this woman walks in for a free exam, and she sits down, she does her intake papers, and this beep goes off. And the people around her stand up and sit down. And she looks at them like, what the heck is, you know, why are you standing up? And it happens again and again. New people come in, they stand up when the beep goes off, they sit down. And so suddenly this woman herself, not knowing why, she starts standing up and sitting down when this beep is going off. Well, this is kind of a social experiment. There's hidden cameras everywhere. All the other people other than the woman are actors, but it shows how this social conditioning can lead us to do things that are even against our best interests or that we don't understand just because we look to our peers for these kind of mental shortcuts about what proper behavior is. So the message in this chapter, don't follow the popular path, isn't that, as you point out, you know, what the majority of people are doing is implicitly wrong. It's not. It's that, as I say in the chapter, we shouldn't mindlessly do what the majority is doing, that these mental shortcuts, there's actually some really interesting kind of brain science behind how we want to conserve calories in our mind. And therefore we look to these cues from our peers about how we should behave as a way to not have to do the thinking ourselves. Well, that of course, as we know from history, can lead to these totally dangerous outcomes when people just follow the majority. And so the real message behind this chapter isn't that whatever most people are doing is wrong, it's that we shouldn't mindlessly assume or frankly assume at all that just because it's popular or just because the majority of people believe it or do it, therefore it is good and I should do it too. It's that there should be an intentionality behind what we're doing. We should pay attention. We should study. We should be analytical about what is happening. And sure, maybe what everyone has decided to do is also the good thing and therefore we should join them. We should just be intelligent and circumspect about that fact and make sure that we know what we're doing rather than just doing it because others are doing it too.
The kind of person who reads and absorbs the lesson in this book is going to become somebody who's capable of empathy, for one thing, because this is a person who is widely read, who is learned, who is aware of other people's ideas in their best form, who is not afraid to take risks, who is not afraid to buck the trends, who has self-respect. I mean, these are the kinds of things, of course, we want all our kids to have. We want ourselves to have. The key thing is, if you get started on this when you're young, when you are in your late teens or early 20s, if you get started on these habits and you persist in them, it is going to reap benefits for you. There's just no way that it won't. And unfortunately, it's like, and in fact, as a matter of fact, you have a chapter on compound interest. It's like compound interest. You learn about it when you're 40, let's say. And you say, doggone it, if I had started this when I was 20, I'd be a millionaire by the time I'm 40. You know, but that's true of all these habits. If right. You start them when you're young, by the time you're 40, you're going to be king of the world.
That's exactly right. I've heard from parents as I've been kind of teasing chapters and talking about this book over the months as I've been working on it. I can't tell you how many parents I've heard from when they see the list of topics in the chapter who are like, oh my gosh, you know, I wish I had that when I was young. And what you just said is exactly how I respond. Like, it's never too late to start. And it's not like you have to master all 89 of these things and, you know, suddenly be this like amazing person who's operating with maximum efficiency in all aspects of your life. It's like pick two, pick five. Let's start small. Let's focus somewhere, gain mastery, and then add more. You know, it's that proverbial quote, I'm going to get wrong, but like the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is today. Just with Jordan Peterson stuff, as I mentioned, it's like kids could gain a lot from following that stuff too, even though his audience primarily is adults. a lot of these life lessons are beneficial for all of us, no matter our age. And so that's why I'm excited about the book. Even though it's marketed towards teens, I think we're going to see a lot of parents who are like, hey, I, you know, got a little kick in the pants here. This is reminding me I need to go focus on, you know, this topic or that topic myself. And I frankly think, as I've done some of this beta testing with families reading this book, I think it's going to be amazing for those families where the parents themselves are working on some of these things, because the teenager is going to see, it's not like that once you turn adult, you're on autopilot. It's not like you got it all figured out. It's this projection of humility from parent to child to say, hey, look, yeah, I may be 20, 30 years older, but I'm still working on this stuff too. This is going to be a lifelong thing of progression and development. And just like you're going to go focus on these 5 or 10 things, maybe from the book, I'm going to go focus on these other ones. I think that creates very healthy relationships where the teenager can see their parents continuing to apply themselves and develop themselves as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So book we're talking about, How to Not Suck at Life, 89 Tips for Teens. Before I continue, is there one or two of these that you just recall taking particular satisfaction with, you're especially happy about, you think are the most surprising or important?
Oh man, where to pick? Yeah, this is a fun topic for me. I actually, I had probably 50 of these nailed down. And then it was about half a year ago, I threw up a Facebook post where I solicited topics from—
Oh, good, you know, idea.
Oh yeah. And they, you know, they came up with the other, you know, whatever, 39 topics for me, where so many people had great ideas. And I was like, oh yeah, obviously, like that one's great. That was great. And so we were able to kind of source from the community, from these parents, so many other ideas. There's obviously some in here that are more political. Like I've got a chapter on don't hurt people and don't take their stuff.
Oh, or taxation is theft. Yeah.
Taxation is theft, right? Or read Karl Marx and throw it in the trash, right? So there's some of these that are more political and economic. Some of them are more traditionally, you know, self-help. In fact, parents that I've shared some of the early script with really love some of those chapters. For example, there's one called Serve Instead of Sulk, right? They see their teenagers kind of mildly depressed or bored or apathetic and complaining about, you know, woe is me that, you know, this girl doesn't like me or, you know, whatever. And so parents who apply this one where they've done some service projects together, they've given their teenager an opportunity to think outside themselves and solve other people's problems rather than dwell on their own. I think those are, like, it's fun to do the political ones and whatnot, but like where we can really help people, teenagers especially, level up in life is some of these very traditional self-help improvement type of topics that teens haven't. I mean, there's what, Chicken Soup for the Soul teenager edition from like 3 decades ago. Like there haven't been a lot of books or material focused on teens really trying to help them overcome this. One that I really liked writing was No One Owes You Anything, right? I see with so many kids this kind of entitlement mentality that starts to develop. And I think especially this TikTok influencer class really engenders this attitude as well. There's no humility, there's no gratitude. It's just like kind of this, what is it called? Instant gratification, entitlement type of general outlook on life. And so then that chapter where I say no one owes you anything, to really reset expectations that, you know, you need to slay the animals that you're going to eat. You need to work for yourself. You need to create value for other people if you want them to provide value to you. You need to shirk this or abandon this mentality that other people owe you stuff. It is kind of different, right? You're still a teenager. Your parents are still providing for you, but you're in that transition moment where you got to start thinking outside yourself. You got to start realizing that, you know, nest that you're in, you're soon going to get kicked out of. And beyond that, like no one's going to owe you anything. And so what are you going to do to develop and apply yourself so that you can create value for other people? And as I say, level up in life so that you're not one of these, you know, basement dwellers or, you know, 20, 30 year old people who are still dependent upon others. So anyways, there's lots of chapters like that are very traditional ideas that, again, good parents are teaching their kids. I just tried to write all these in a bit of a twist and with a bit of edge and with that kind of third party validation so that I can come in to the teenager reading this book and say, yeah, your mom or dad talks to you about this stuff, but I'm going to talk to you about it in a little bit of a fun, different way where you're hopefully really going to get it. It's going to click for you. And these ideas are going to be cool. They're going to be relevant to your life beyond just feeling like mom and dad are like ramming this down your throat. I want to be that third party that comes and says, actually, these are really good ideas. And if you want to succeed, you should begin to think about how you can apply them too.
Let me just read. Now, remember, there are 89 of these, but let me just read almost at random some of the chapter titles just to give people an idea of what they can expect. So it's okay to ask questions. You're not great the way you are. Oh, how important that is. Develop a practical skill. Don't keep up with the Joneses. Travel, which, of course, you don't have to convince me of that. It's my favorite thing, which is why I've been suffering so much over the past year and a half. But learn from the past. Specialize in something. Hack your education. Be smart about debt. Find a mentor. Start a side hustle or two. Prisons and schools are similar. Value liberty, not security. Be a good friend. The good guy doesn't always win. And so on and so forth. I mean, these are really, really great. Now, there are a couple I want to pick out here.
Yeah.
One of them is finish what you start. Now, that seems obvious. Let me say this. Years ago, like a long, long time, like, well, for me, a long time ago, let's say maybe 15 years ago or 12, 15 years ago, I started on a project where I thought to myself, what are my talents? This is before I had Liberty Classroom. What are my talents? And it turns out that one of my talents is, as the former captain of the North Andover High School math team, I'm really good at math. Okay, really good at math. Like I do all kinds of weird math and advanced stuff. And I was involved in a lot of math competition, let's say, when I was a kid. But what I was also good at is I could explain it. Because if you ever ask, if you say to people, I study history, oh, they all love you. Okay, because I've done both. And if you say instead, well, I study math, they say, oh my gosh, get away. I hated that, right? They all say that. One good thing that I'm good at, though, is I can explain it. I can explain it in a way that people get it. And they say to me, oh, geez, if my teacher had explained it like that, I would have understood. I got that so many times. That makes me feel good. So I thought, I'm going to create a math resource for homeschoolers that's going to kick the butt of everybody else's. Because I can explain things. I can explain things even better than the Khan Academy can explain them. Super, super simple. Very complicated concepts, I can make them super simple. And I was going to make videos. And so I started planning the whole thing out. I spent a lot of time on it, going through chapter after chapter of an algebra book, and I was all set to do it. And then it really dawned on me that the existing homeschool resources were really just, because they were companies putting them together, they were just vastly better than anything I could do on my own. And I thought, I could continue on the principle of, I have to finish things I start. But it was actually vastly better for me to know exactly when to quit. I would almost think that number 90 would be, although in general you should finish what you start, also know when you're in a situation where the sensible thing is to stop.
Absolutely. Yeah. What's fun about a lot of these topics, I think of like the Skip College one. I have a whole separate book called Skip College.
That's why I didn't bring that one up. Yeah.
And so even in this chapter two, it's like, there are obviously things here, like only a Sith deals in absolutes, right? So it's like with Skip College, it's like, yeah, Skip College. But look, like for some of you, college may be the right thing. It comes down to intentionality. It comes down to being very wise and understanding about the decisions that you're making.
And so are you making that decision precisely because, as you would say elsewhere in the book, you're just kind of following the trend that everybody does, so you don't even really reflect on it?
And my message in Finish What You Start is more that you shouldn't let your anxieties and self-doubt and your fears prevent you from crossing the finish line, because I do believe there is power in crossing finishing lines. As you point out, like, you know, if you're in a race and suddenly there's, I don't know, like alligators and, you know, landmines and whatever between you and the finish line, it's going to be prudent to like not continue on that journey because of the risk. But in general, like absent credible reasons not to pursue a finish, like we shouldn't try and cross a finish line for the sake of crossing a finish line. It's just that when we set out to do something, provided that there's still, you know, a benefit in seeing these projects through the end, I think we learn something about ourselves as we work through those insecurities and challenges and struggles. Perhaps there's a calculus to be made, as you did, that like, oh, look, you know, I need to now apply my energies over here. And that's great. You're identifying new finish lines for you to go do, new projects for you to do. It's really just about seeing ourselves through the challenges and not giving up. That's kind of the general message that I'm hoping people take away from that chapter. Not that, you know, these arbitrary, you know, deadlines you set and goals you set must always be completed. It's more just about always that intentionality. It's about overcoming your challenges, and it's about making sure that you can do hard things and showing yourself that you can do hard things and get through those more challenging periods.
All right. Talk about what you say in Dress the Part.
This is one that was a struggle for me growing up because, you know, I was a skater boy in Southern California in the 90s. And so I loved, you know, I guess dressing that part. But dressing the part, this chapter is about presentation. It's about how if you're looking to level up in life, look, people judge books by their cover. Like we can use the trite, you know, whatever and say, don't judge a book by your cover. But humans do this. We are all discriminatory. We are all discerning. Again, those mental shortcuts that we're trying to do, we try and evaluate another person and say, oh, like, is this someone that's going to be a threat to me or a help to me? Am I going to like them? Is this going to create unnecessary drama for me? And so you can say that that's a bad thing that we, you know, that we judge people based on appearance, but it is an element of human society. And so why not use that to our advantage? If you're looking to level up in life, if you're looking to be a credible person, a hardworking person, a successful person, if you want other people to hire you, promote you, work with you, whatever, you want to cast a positive impression. And there's perhaps no greater shortcut in doing this than having a visual presentation that's going to be endearing to that person, that's going to be inviting to that person. And so I just feel like the way that we dress always sends an impression. So we have to recognize that if we want to create a good impression on other people, a teacher, an employer, a colleague, a friend, then we have to dress the part. And of course, for teenagers, they're still figuring this out. And that's why I felt a chapter like this would be important because especially as a teenager, if you have really good grooming standards, right? If even just doing the basics of good hygiene, let alone having clean and professional dress in those environments where that's going to matter, you're going to stand out. And I think that's what a lot of this is that if you're applying so many of these ideas that are unconventional for so many people at this younger age, you're going to stand out. Other people are going to recognize you. They're going to want to work with you or for you or hire you. And you're going to accelerate your own professional development far beyond other people just because you're applying some of these smarter ideas. I feel like dressing the part, dressing up, casting a good appearance for others. And even frankly, you just feel better about yourself sometimes when you're doing that, right? Like I know when I dress really nice because I've got meetings, like I just feel better about myself. I've taken the time to get myself ready to invest in myself a little bit that day. And that gives me confidence. It gives me kind of a little bit of an ego boost that gives me some energy to go out and conquer the world. And I feel like teenagers don't often have that experience. They don't often have those settings or circumstances where they can kind of dress the part. And so if they can create those experiences and be, again, intentional about pursuing this, I think that they're going to see a very positive return on investment.
Now, this is the chapter. Oddly enough, for a normal person, the taxation is theft chapter would be the kind of thing that would shock them. But for some libertarians, telling them to dress well, that's the controversial chapter, you know? Yeah, I know taxation is theft. I already know all this other stuff. But think of it this way. You go to a job interview, you are not showing up in your untucked shirt. And, you know, you're certainly not showing up in a t-shirt. You're not showing up in ripped jeans, whatever. You're showing up in the best outfit you can so you look the most put together. Okay, so everybody agrees with me on that. On a job interview, you want to look good. So now the question is, why in other situations do you not want to do that? So leaving aside your daily life, I think about a lot of the conferences that go on these days, like mm-hmm. if I go to a podcasting conference or a marketing conference, everybody is competing with everybody else to be as casual as possible. You know, they come out with their sneakers and their and of course, they're just copying what everybody else is doing. I would screw with them by coming out wearing a really, really sharp-looking suit. Because I look at these people and I think this is a kid. I mean, now maybe he's got something valuable to teach me. A lot of kids, I can learn something from a kid. I could learn something from a young chess prodigy for sure. But I just look at the stage and I can't help but I have to try to not to laugh when I see that. So it reminds me when I was a professor and the other professors did not always wear, you know, especially once they got tenure, they would come in jeans and whatever. And I always wore something nice. I always was presentable. And I had a student ask me once, why do you do that? The other professors don't always do that. And I said, it's my way of telling you that I consider you important. If I went to your wedding, I would dress up. Why? Because that's important. Well, I consider teaching you to be important. I consider that to be just as important. And so I want to reflect that I didn't just go through my drawer and say, well, let's see, I'm going to teach, but let me dig out what I would wear if I were going to dig ditches. That would be disrespectful toward them. And I think that's totally lost. Like anybody talking like me today is considered just hopelessly behind the times. Well, on some things, I'm very, very happy to be hopelessly behind the times.
Now, Tom, I think we can both agree that dressing the part includes wearing Hawaiian shirts, right?
I was hoping you weren't aware of that particular controversy.
Moving on.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm going to ask you a personal question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
How many kids do you have and how old is the oldest?
So I have two kids. They are 12 and 10. And so as I was, and maybe this isn't where you're going, but as I was writing the book, not yet being a parent of teens myself, I was a bit of a problematic, rebellious teen myself. And so what I tried to do in writing this book, certainly the conversations I've had with parents, all our Tuttle Twins families, and kind of gleaning from them what they're going through, but I basically wrote this book for me, for the 16-year-old me back in the day who I remember very well and where I was at in life. And so that was kind of my avatar as I was working on this book.
I like that. I was wondering, because I know that you've sort of beta tested Tuttle Twins books with your kids, and I was wondering if maybe they're close enough that you might be running this stuff by them.
Not quite.
I want this for, and don't you dare send me a free copy. I insist on I'm going to buy it. I want to buy two copies because I have one teenager who's off at college. Yes, she thought it through and it did seem to be the thing for her. And not to mention the whole thing's paid for. So that makes it a heck of a lot easier.
Oh, yeah.
But for my two oldest who are still at home, we're both teenagers. They'd both benefit from this. And I'm not sure they're the type to take a book like this and read it cover to cover, but they would look at the table of contents and say, I have to know what he's talking about with this. You know, it's like what a good email subject line does. I have to see what he's talking about.
And at the end of the day, as I said, like each of these chapters is two pages. I'm not looking to be the end all be all resource for these ideas. I'm looking to spark an interest in these different topics where they're going to go out and maybe find a book that's dedicated to just that issue, or pull up some podcasts where people are talking about that topic, or watching some YouTube videos. Like my hope here is to really just get the wheels turning about that issue. As you point out, more as a reference guide than a sit down, read it cover to cover type of book. I think I even say this in the conclusion. It's like, come back, right? Come back and pick these out. You're going to be at different stages in life 2 years from now versus now. Some of these ideas will be more meaningful or relevant to you later on than right now when you're skimming through the book. So it is meant to be kind of this periodic reference where you can glean from it something that's going to be helpful to you at that stage of your journey, but that it's not going to be the end all, you know, here's everything you need to know and think about this. I more want to prompt thinking and the introspection and other research and education about these ideas.
Let me tell you one last thing before we wrap up. When I saw the chapter called Fast, I thought to myself, yes, people do need to be taught to do things fast. We sometimes think, and then I looked at it and no, it's about fasting. Okay, fasting is fine. I have no objection to fasting. I've done it myself. But what I had in mind was, I like that I've gotten to a level of skill at which I can take a task that might take some people all day or several days and get it done in 45 minutes. And part of the way I do that is with a little productivity trick I learned. Well, now I can't remember where I learned it. Somebody taught it to me, where I take a clock and I say, let's say half an hour. I say, all right, I'm going to run this clock for half an hour. And this email that I'm writing or whatever it is I'm working on has to be done in that amount of time. Because if you say, well, I have all day and I have a few things to do, you're going to be on this tab of your browser and that tab and on this social media platform. You're going to make a phone call, whatever. And not to mention your attention span is not 5 hours long. It just is not. You'd like it to be, but it isn't. Mm-hmm. And so you're not at your best during that entire 5 hours. But half an hour chunks, it'll make you shut everything down and work fiercely. And then after that half an hour, you take a 15-minute break, you go do something you like, and then you come back, and again, you're really at your best. But just thinking, I got 5 hours, I'm going to sit here and work. Honestly, I can get more done in an hour and a half than somebody who's going to take that approach. And so that's what I mean about doing things fast.
I like that. We'll throw that in the second edition.
Second edition. Yeah, that is so great.
90 tips for teens, new and improved.
Yeah, that's right. Parentheses, one of them's from Tom Woods. So, all right. So obviously we can get this book on Amazon, I presume.
Yep. It's all on Amazon. We're just directing everyone there. And as I say, we'll be developing some additional kind of marketing resources and stuff beyond this for teens over time, but want to come out with a splash. And right now that's at Amazon.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. And
Tom, I should point out, I don't know if you saw this, when we pushed this out on Amazon, when the pre-order link went live, this book was the top book on all of Amazon for about an hour. I had my time of glory, you know, Orwell's 1984 and Brave New World have been in the top 10, as you might imagine, for months with all the nonsense going on. And I get this alert on my phone. It was someone tweeted it, and it was number one on all of Amazon, just because we had, you know, as I say, we got 500,000 people on our list. We're out there sharing the book with a bunch of my other lists and communities I'm in. And anyway, so that was kind of a fun little milestone for the period of an hour that we had
that's an amazing achievement. And it's truly an amazing achievement, especially because you're competing against fiction, which is what most people read. You're competing against cookbooks, which actually do, even in the internet age, cookbooks actually sell really, really well, surprisingly. Mm. People don't want to be on their Kindle with a cookbook. They want to have a big book with color photos that they can flip around. But anyway, that is an amazing thing. And what I'm really looking forward to is on the release date, which is coming up quite soon. And by the way, everybody, just go get this. I know it's pre-order. Just go ahead and pre-order. You all have Prime probably. I'm linking to the book at tomwoods.com/1966. Go get it while you're thinking about it. But I'm looking forward to when you send out the email to your list saying the book is out today and you getting the benefits of email marketing on that day. Oh, it's going to be glorious. Good for you. I'm looking forward to it. Just remember, you can't put the, you know this, but I'm telling this to the audience. You can't put your Amazon affiliate link in your email, as tempting as it is. They don't expressly say this, but what they do say is, here's where you can put your Amazon affiliate link, and email is not included. So just to be on the safe side. So you can either send them to a page that has your link on it, and they click that link, or you can just say, my book is launching today. I don't care about my affiliate commissions. I just want to make sales of the book, and just include a direct link to Amazon. But just another little tip, not to get your Amazon affiliate account revoked. That's another thing to know about. So anyway, best of luck with this. Again, the book is How to Not Suck at Life, 89 Tips for Teens, linked at tomwoods.com/1966. I'm going to say something that sounds really sappy and cheesy, but I think sometimes we don't say enough sappy and cheesy. Maybe that's another thing. Maybe that's 91, 92. Be willing to say sappy and cheesy things. Like Michael Malice has sometimes said, you should sometimes tell your friends how much you appreciate them and how glad you are to have them as friends and things like, you know, and Malice sometimes has this very abrasive exterior and you don't think he says things like that, but he absolutely does and he urges people to do it. Well, likewise, I'm going to say something that I think I could only say because you're younger than I am. And that is, I'm just really proud of you. Honestly, I'm proud that I know you. I'm proud that we worked together for a number of years and that you just, and I'm so glad you're no longer my tech guy. Because what a waste of your talents that would be for you to be my tech guy. You know, in a way, I'm sorry I'm talking too much, but it's like when Michael McDonald used to be in Steely Dan and he's singing alongside Donald Fagen, who's okay, but he does not have a good voice. And there was this one YouTube video, I wish I could find it, where Michael McDonald, who has this amazing, soulful voice, is singing. And Fagen jumps in, and he's all off key, and McDonald just has this look on his face like, I can't believe I'm second fiddle to this guy. And then finally, he went off and started his own solo career. Well, that's kind of how I feel. I am so glad that Connor Boyack is out there absolutely crushing it in every possible way. So congratulations to you, and I hope this thing is a huge success for you.
Tom, you're very kind. I value our friendship and everything you're doing. Allow people like me to spread the word and give us those marketing tips along the way that can help us do it even more. So thanks as always.
All right, folks, that is it for today. So do check out Connor's book. Again, as I said, it's linked to tomwoods.com/1966. You're going to want this, I guarantee you. One last thing, of course, the 2000th episode event for The Tom Woods Show in Orlando. It's just going crazy in terms of registration. So pretty soon, like probably this week, I'm going to have to just declare that the reception for supporting listeners is sold out because we have so many people there at this point. It's out of control. And half the people are not even supporting listeners. So yes, we are checking. So you can't sneak into the reception. You're already getting the evening's entertainment for free. You can't also have the reception for the folks who support the show through their contributions at supportinglisteners.com. But it really is to the point where it is out of control. So I am going to have to declare it sold out. Not the main event, but the reception for supporting listeners. So if that's something you want to be part of, then go and register. And if you're not a supporting listener, become one first and then go and register to be part of that reception before the event. And that includes, if you register for the reception, that includes the main event. And all of this costs you nothing. But as I say, for the reception, you have to be a member of the Supporting Listeners program, which is at supportinglisteners.com. The event website for the 2000th episode event is tomwoods2000.com. And this is going to be huge and amazing. You are going to have a fantastic time. So check it out, tomwoods2000.com. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.